This is Janice Schweizer returning with part two of the pantograph for Tuesday, January 5th, 2021. I'll begin with the death notices on page A6. Linda Lou Allen, 82, of Argenta, passed away Thursday, December 31st, 2020, at Liberty Village in Clinton. Private family services will be held. Memorials are suggested to the Alzheimer's Association. Army veteran Thomas L. Gaines, 77, of Hayworth, passed away Monday, January 4th, 2021, at his home. His funeral will be at 1 o'clock p.m. Friday, January 8th, 2021, at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Bloomington. There will be no visitation. Burial will be in Holy Cross Cemetery in Normal. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Community Cancer Center. Deborah June Kelton, 66, of Decatur, Illinois, passed away Friday on January 1st, 2021. A graveside service will be held at 1 o'clock p.m. on Friday, January 8th, 2021, at Mount Gilead Cemetery. Navy veteran Harry Dean Bragner, 89, of Rochester, Illinois, formerly of Clinton, Illinois, passed away at 8:17 p.m. December 30th, 2020, of natural causes at the Illinois Veterans Home in Quincy, Illinois. Graveside services will be held at a later date at Memorial Park Cemetery in Clinton, Illinois, with military honors. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions may be directed to the Wounded Warriors Project at Post Office Box 758516 in Topeka, Kansas 66675. Leslie Eugene Jean Harvey, 68, of Bloomington, passed away at 3:45 p.m. Friday, December 25th, 2020, at OSF St. Joseph Medical Center in Bloomington, surrounded by his family. A private family service will be held. Burial will be in Holy Cross Cemetery in Normal. There will be no visitation. There will be a celebration of life at a later date when it is safe to gather. Memorials may be directed to Huck's Caring for Kids or to a charity of your choice. Lois V. Beeler, 88, of Peoria, Illinois, passed away Sunday, January 3, 2021, at Unity Point Health Methodist in Peoria after suffering with various health challenges throughout her life. A graveside service for immediate family will be conducted Thursday, January 7th, 2021, at Hillcrest Memory Gardens in Morton, Illinois. Memorials may be made to the Morton United Methodist Church Building Fund or to Lutheran Hillside Village in on Galena Road in Peoria or to the Illinois chapter of the Alzheimer's Association. Richard Brooks Ferguson, U.S. Army veteran of Cooksville, passed away on December 30th, 2020 at Carl Broman Medical Center. Cremation has been accorded at East Lawn Funeral Home and a memorial service will be held in the spring. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to the Paralyzed Veterans of America. M. Joanne Nottingham, 84, of Normal, Illinois, formerly of Decatur, Illinois, passed away January 1st, 2021 at Carl Broman Medical Center in Normal, Illinois. Funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. Thursday, January 7th, 2021 at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Bloomington, Illinois. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. on Thursday at the church, and burial will be at Graceland Cemetery in Decatur, Illinois. Memorials may be made to the Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Bloomington, Illinois. Returning now to local news, we have final plat of Phoenix Industrial Park okayed. This is by Sierra Henry. Council members clashed Monday night over a decision to approve the final plat of a roughly 65-acre industrial park in North Normal. The council conditionally approved by a 6-1 vote the final plat of the Phoenix Industrial Subdivision in the former Wildwood Industries property following a heated discussion. Councilman Stan Nord was the only no vote. What we have here is a success story of economic development, Councilman Kevin McCarthy said Monday. I think it's fantastic to get outside investors coming into our community and invest millions of dollars in economic development. The submitted plat from Phoenix Investors LLC, which recently purchased the land, is nearly identical to the former Wildwood Industries subdivision on the southeast corner of North Main Street and Carrick Road. Normal approved the Wildwood subdivision in 2008, but the final plat was never recorded, and the then owner did not pay the required development fees nor file the required certificates. A 500,000-square-foot warehouse and distribution building was partially built but abandoned there before the firm purchased this property. As part of the conditional approval, they must file all required certificate and payment fees pertaining to the plat. Phoenix Investors LLC is a national commercial real estate firm based in Milwaukee that focuses on revitalizing industrial properties throughout the United States. Phoenix Investors proposed the project in June. It will include a nearly $16 million investment to renovate and lease the existing facility for warehouse and distribution purposes. Once completed, Phoenix Investors said the project is expected to create 50 jobs. In DeWitt County, we have Clinton Fire Department stays busy. Fire in Warner Hospital among 20 calls on Sunday, by Kevin Barlow. A fire in a mechanical room at the Warner Hospital and Health Services was one of 20 calls the Clinton Fire Department handled on Sunday. The fire was contained quickly and an evacuation of the hospital was not necessary. Crews remained on the scene for several hours to help ventilate the smoke from the hospital, said Fire Chief Jeff Hoke in a statement on social media. The New Year's Day ice storm and 6 inches of snow that fell Sunday morning contributed to the high rate of calls on Sunday. The department also pulled several power lines from houses, including one which caused smoke or a burning smell inside 4 homes in the 600 block of West Washington. The department investigated a gas leak in a residence and requested Ameren, Illinois to shut gas and power off to decrease the risk of an explosion. Several of these calls came out at the same time or while we were on the scene of other calls, Hoke said. Assisting the Clinton Fire Department were departments from Kinney, Wapella, Maroa, and Waynesville. Ameren, Illinois, the DeWitt County EMS, DeWitt County CENCOM, and Clinton Police also assisted. Next, we have State Senator Resigns Joining Pritzker Office by Jerry Nowicki. Democratic State Senator Andy Menar of downstate Bunker Hill announced Monday he will resign from the General Assembly effective January 17th to join the governor's office as an advisor 2 days later. The announcement marked the second high-profile resignation from the state Senate in 1 week's time, as Minority Leader Bill Brady, Republican from Bloomington, announced his immediate resignation on December 31st. Menar announced his resignation shortly after noon on Monday, and within 20 minutes, Governor J.B. Pritzker's office announced he would hire Menar as a senior advisor. He will be paid $278,000 annually, according to the governor's office, half of which will be paid out from a limited liability company created by Pritzker to compensate several of his top aides beyond their state payrolls. That company is East Jackson Street, LLC. The rate of pay is more than 3.5 times Menar's state salary, which was $79,100 in 2019, according to a state database run through the Illinois Comptroller's Office. In a statement, Menar said his wife Trista and three children have only known me as a husband and father who carries the responsibility of serving as an elected official. They have never known a day otherwise, he said. The time has come for someone new to take up the call in the Illinois Senate. Central Illinois is full of outstanding individuals ready to step forward to meet the challenge and be an agent of change for downstate Illinois. Menar would be up for re-election in the 48th Senate District in 2022, likely facing a difficult challenge in an area that leaned heavily toward Republican President Donald Trump in the 2020 election. He did not respond to a phone message from Capital News Illinois on Monday. Menar replaces Nikki Budinski, who left the administration in February as a senior advisor. Andy is a fiercely devoted public servant with an enviable track record in the legislature. His counsel and friendship have been invaluable over the last 2 years, Pritzker's chief of staff Ann Caprara said in a statement. We are elated that he will be serving alongside this team as we face the challenges of the coming years. The Bunker Hill Democrat has served in the Senate since 2012 and was most notably the lead negotiator of an evidence-based funding formula for K-12 education, which directs money to the schools that are furthest from funding adequacy based on a number of factors. That reform passed in 2017. Prior to the General Assembly, he served as a city councilman, then mayor in Bunker Hill, as well as on the Macoupin County Board chairman. Brady, who resigned ahead of the new year, served as Senate GOP leader since 2017, but members of his caucus elected Senator Dan McConchie of Hawthorne Woods to lead them in the 102nd General Assembly, which begins January 13th. Looking at some sports news now, we have Illini Freshman, a Special Group by Joey Wagner. Brad Underwood nudged back at the notion that his three freshmen have been eased into major minutes. Their acclimation to college basketball and the Big Ten, which has 11 teams ranked in the top 51 of the national NET rankings, has been more like being thrown into a pack of hungry lions with red meat taped to their back. As Underwood, Illinois' head coach, likes to mention, college basketball is a night and day difference compared to high school hoops. Sure, conceptually, the game is the same. Dimensions of the court don't change, and the ball still has to go in the hoop. But there are detailed scouting reports, defensive responsibilities, and bigger, stronger players on the opposing team who have waged the college basketball war a few times. If number 12 Illinois at 8-3 and 4-1 hopes to get to the NCAA tournament, which will be hosted entirely in the state of Indiana, those freshmen had to produce. They're highly touted. Both Adam Miller and Andre Curbelo are four-star guards who have gotten immediate and substantial playing time. Three-star forward Coleman Hawkins was overlooked at times when anyone discussed Illinois' recruiting class, which was ranked number 16 nationally and third in the Big Ten, according to 24/7 Sports. Although Hawkins is quickly gaining Underwood's trust and has earned minutes. In Saturday's win against Purdue, the three combined for 23 points, and there were stints of the game where all three played in the same lineup. Those guys have been thrown to the wolves, so to speak, and now they're really not freshmen anymore, especially Adam Miller and Andre Curbelo, with the minutes they've played, Underwood said. Those guys have seen some really good teams and some really good players. They've seen a lot of schemes thrown at them. They're maturing into really good players pretty quickly. Curbelo has been an electric player off the bench, dazzling with his flashy passes and ability to get to the rim at a moment's notice. Miller, despite some early season struggles on offense, is improving by leaps and bounds defensively. Though Miller is averaging 8.9 points on 34% shooting, Underwood is steadfast in his belief that the freshman has big games coming, particularly soon. Hawkins has been able to grow at a slower pace, in part because of the play of DeMonte Williams. Underwood has been able to shorten his bench to bring Hawkins along slowly. He was an instant jolt of energy off the bench during the first media timeout on Saturday. Having three freshmen on the court, you don't see that every day, Curbelo said. I think as the games go by, as times go by, as practices go by, we're going to continue to improve off the court when we're at practice because that's what is going to keep us getting minutes. It's the Big Ten. It's a hard league. I think Coach Underwood does a really good job of rotating guys and trusting us. We're going to continue to earn that trust in practice because what we do in practice is what we're going to do in the game. We've just got to continue to improve, keep getting better, and keep being coachable because that's what's going to give us minutes altogether. I think we can do a really good job. Offense is the basis of star ratings for high school prospects, but Underwood is every bit, if not more, invested in players' defensive developments. Miller, Underwood said, had the best defensive grade a week ago in a home win against Indiana. I'm slowly learning to trust them, Underwood said. 3 weeks ago, probably not as much. I probably would have had some high blood pressure. That's more on the defensive end than anything. Our growth on the defensive side for those young guys has been fabulous. It's a matter of time before they really dial in offensive and start making shots. We saw a little touch of that Saturday, and I hope it continues. Illinois doesn't have to lean on its freshmen to make the NCAA tournament. Ayo Dosunmu, Kofi Cockburn, Trent Frazier, DeMonte Williams, and Georgie Bejanvili are the veterans who give Illinois all the pieces to qualify. But a deep run in the tournament, that's where the freshmen will come into play. The season is only 11 games old, but those 11 games included just two easy games, maybe three, depending on how one views Ohio. The growth process has been fast and furious, and there's no eject button in sight to get off the wild ride of the Big Ten. They made tremendous growth from when they got here, Williams said. They're going to be a special group when they're sophomores, juniors, or upperclassmen. Their work ethic is the thing that stands out to me the most. They're always willing to work, doing whatever it takes so they can get better, no matter what it is. Extra lift or a couple extra wind sprints. I love that group. That group is going to be something special. Also in sports, we have Indiana Madness. NCAA tournament will be played in the Hoosier State. This is by Michael Moreau of the Associated Press. The NCAA is giving Indiana an exclusive ticket to showcase March Madness, and the basketball-crazed state can't wait to take center stage this spring. The NCAA announced Monday that its showcase event, the Division I Men's Basketball Tournament, all 67 games of it, will be played entirely in or near Indianapolis. The hope is to limit the possibility that the coronavirus pandemic cancels the wildly popular and lucrative tournament for a second consecutive season. There are a number of world-class facilities in a close location, and that was critical because you have to run a large number of games simultaneously that you can manage and control, NCAA President Mark Emmert said. There were a number of cities that were very interested in hosting this event, but the immediate opportunity to do this in Indianapolis was pretty self-evident for several reasons. For one, we are already going to be there. Indy was already scheduled to host the Final Four, and it didn't take long for the city to emerge as the favorite. The original plan was for the 67 games to be played at 13 sites across the country, starting with the first four in Dayton, Ohio. Regional sites were set for Minneapolis, Denver, New York City, and Memphis, Tennessee. Instead, the buzzer beaters and jaw-dropping performances will all take place in a state known perhaps more than any other for its love of basketball. I really don't care if they play the tournament on Saturn or in Indianapolis, Louisville coach Chris Mack said. Hopefully, we're a part of it and we do our part to get there. And wherever they put it, they put it. Logistically, Indy made sense too. Dozens of restaurants and hotels are within walking distance of Lucas Oil Stadium, home of the NFL's Indianapolis Colts, and Bankers Life Fieldhouse, home of the NBA's Indiana Pacers and WNBA's Indiana Fever. Many of those businesses and venues are connected by skywalks that allow players, coaches, or fans to stay indoors. Hinkle House, the historic home of the Butler Bulldogs and the Indiana Farmers Coliseum, where the IUPUI Jaguars play, are just short drives from the downtown area. Mackey Arena at Purdue and Assembly Hall at Indiana are also about an hour's drive from downtown. All of those venues are slated to host games. Playing in a state where the sport is revered and basketball stars are considered royalty doesn't hurt either. Oscar Robertson, Larry Bird, Rick Mount, Damon Bailey, and the late John Wooden were all stars here at one level or another. Bob Knight, Gene Cady, and the late Tony Hinkle, originator of the Orange basketball, all coached in the state, which for decades had a single-class state tournament won famously in 1954 by Milan High, the inspiration for Hollywood's Hoosiers. So perhaps bringing March Madness back home to Indiana, home of the NCAA's headquarters, was the natural choice. Turning to national news, we have more in GOP reject Trump tactics, but some Republicans still on board in an effort to overturn the election. This is by Lisa Mascaro and Mary Claire Jelinek with the Associated Press. With mounting desperation, President Donald Trump called on Republican lawmakers Monday to reverse his election loss to Joe Biden when Congress convenes for a joint session this week to confirm the Electoral College vote. Trump's unprecedented attempt to overturn the presidential election is splitting the Republican Party. Some GOP lawmakers backing Trump are rushing ahead, despite an outpouring of condemnation from current and former party officials, warning the effort is undermining Americans' faith in democracy. All 10 living former defense secretaries wrote an op-ed article that, quote, "the time for questioning the results has passed," unquote. It is unclear the extent to which GOP leaders in Congress will be able to control Wednesday's joint session, which could drag into the night, though the challenges to the election are all but certain to fail. Trump himself is whipping up crowds for a Wednesday rally near the White House. In response, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser has requested a limited National Guard deployment to help bolster the Metropolitan Police Department. During a press conference on Monday, Bowser asked that local area residents stay away from downtown D.C. and avoid confrontations with anyone who is looking for a fight. But she warned, "We will not allow people to incite violence, intimidate our residents, or cause destruction in our city." Trump's allies are taking up his unfounded claims of voter fraud, but according to a consensus of election officials in the states he's disputing, as well as his former Attorney General William Barr, there is no evidence of fraud that could change the election outcome. Officials who have control over elections in their states, including battlegrounds Biden won, have certified those results as valid. Of the more than 50 lawsuits the president and his allies have filed challenging results, nearly all have been dismissed or dropped. He's also lost twice at the U.S. Supreme Court. The effort to keep Trump in office is being led by Senators Josh Hawley of Missouri and Ted Cruz of Texas, along with rank-and-file House members, some on the party's fringe. Just got off the phone with Donald Trump, tweeted newly elected Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia, who is aligned with a conspiracy group backing Trump. "He wants you to call your rep and senators today, all day," she tweeted Monday. "Don't let Republicans be the surrender caucus." Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell was conferring privately with other Republicans to assess the days ahead, a defining period that will help shape the post-Trump era. Both Hawley and Cruz are potential 2024 presidential contenders, vying for Trump's base of supporters. Vice President Mike Pence, who is under pressure to tip the results for Trump, will be closely watched as he presides in a ceremonial role over Wednesday's joint session. I promise you this. On Wednesday, we will have our day in Congress, Pence said, while campaigning in Georgia for Republicans ahead of Tuesday's runoff elections that will determine control of the Senate. One of those Georgia Republicans, Senator Kelly Loeffler, who faces Democrat Raphael Warnock, announced she will object to Biden's win. The other Republican seeking re-election, David Perdue, who is running against Democrat John Ossoff, will not be eligible to vote Wednesday in the Senate. Biden, speaking at a drive-in rally in Atlanta, said Trump spends more time whining and complaining than he does working on solving the coronavirus pandemic. He added dismissively, "I don't know why he still wants the job. He doesn't want to do the work." During the day on Monday, more current and former GOP officials rebuked the effort to upend the election. Former Senator John Danforth of Missouri offered sharp criticism of the attempt by Hawley and the others, an especially stinging statement since Danforth has long been a supporter of Hawley. Next, we have U.S. starts second vaccine round. Britain imposes nationwide lockdown amid latest surge. This is by Eugene Garcia and Danica Kirka with the Associated Press. The first Americans inoculated against COVID-19 began rolling up their sleeves for their second and final dose on Monday, while Britain introduced another vaccine on the same day it imposed a new nationwide lockdown against the rapidly surging virus. New York State, meanwhile, announced its first known case of the new and seemingly more contagious variant, detected in a man in his 60s in Saratoga Springs. Colorado, California, and Florida previously reported infections involving the mutant version that has been circulating in England. The emergence of the variant has added even more urgency to the worldwide race to vaccinate people against the scourge. In Southern California, intensive care nurse Helen Cordova got her second dose of the Pfizer vaccine at Kaiser Permanente Los Angeles Medical Center, along with other doctors and nurses who bared their arms the prescribed 3 weeks after they received their first shot. The second round of shots began in various locations around the country as the U.S. death toll surpassed 352,000. I'm really excited because that means I'm just that much closer to having the immunity and being a little safer when I come to work. And you know, just being around my family, Cordova said. Over the weekend, U.S. government officials reported that vaccinations had accelerated significantly. As of Monday, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said nearly 4.6 million shots had been dispensed in the U.S. after a slow and uneven start to the campaign, marked by confusion, logistical hurdles, and a patchwork of approaches by state and local authorities. Britain, meanwhile, became the first nation to start using the COVID-19 vaccine developed by AstraZeneca and Oxford University, ramping up its nationwide inoculation campaign amid soaring infection rates blamed on the new variant. Britain's vaccination program began December 8th with the shot developed by Pfizer and its German partner, BioNTech. The rollout came the same day as Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced a new lockdown for England until at least mid-February. And with that, we conclude the reading of the Pantograph for Tuesday, January 5th, 2021. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I hope you have a great day.